Well, the first thing I do when I wake up in the morning is I fire up my computer and I check it for emails. The first thing I do when I get to work is I fire up the computer and I check it for emails. The first thing I do when I get home from work is I fire up the computer and I check it for emails. And the last thing I do for the day when I crawl into bed is I pull out my laptop while I'm in bed and open it up, fire it up and check for emails one more time. My wife Stephanie hates it. She says I'm always on the computer. She says we don't talk anymore. And so I fix that up by buying her a laptop. And so whenever she wants to talk to me, she can send me an email. Emails. We're always on emails. And then something had to come along and ruin emails for all of us. And that was spam. Spam. You've won the lottery. Spam. There's a Nigerian prince who wants to give you his money. Spam. There's a Russian lady who wants to get to know you. Spam. Now the whole problem with spam isn't just that we didn't ask for it. The problem with spam is it's full of lies. It's fake. It's not real. But it's not just spam that's not real. It seems like most of us here struggle with being real. They've done studies and they found out that 1 in 3 people will lie on their job interview. 1 in 3 people will lie on their CVs. 4 out of 5 high school students will cheat in exams. 7 out of 10 normal people will lie regularly to their spouses, their family, their friends and their loved ones. And so with all these lies around us, how do we know if we're being real? How do we know we're being true? How do we know we're being authentic? And so that's what we're going to look at tonight. The question is, how can I be true to myself? How can I be true to me, my friends, my family, and ultimately to God? How can I be true? And to answer this question, we're going to look at a story that's recorded for us in the Bible by an eyewitness account by a guy called Luke. Now, there's no need to look at that piece of paper here because I'll retell you the story. And the story that Luke records about Jesus goes like this. One day, Jesus walked to the city Jericho and he was passing through it. And there was a man there called Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus was a chief tax collector and he was very rich. And Zacchaeus wanted to check out Jesus for himself. But he couldn't because of the crowds that were around Jesus. And Zacchaeus was a very short man. And so Zacchaeus ran ahead of the crowd. He climbed a fig tree because Jesus was going to be coming by that way. But when Jesus came that way, he came to the fig tree and he looked up at Zacchaeus and he said, "Zacchaeus, come down now because I must stay with you today." And Zacchaeus came down and he welcomed Jesus with joy. Now the people who saw this grumbled. This man Jesus, he's just made himself the guest of a sinner. But Zacchaeus stood there and he said to Jesus, "My Lord, everything I have, I'm going to give half away to the poor. And whatever I've ripped off people, I'm going to give 4 times that amount back." And Jesus said, "Salvation has come to this house today because this man is a child of Abraham, because the Son of God has come to look for and to find the lost." Now in this story, something really strange happens. We meet a man called Zacchaeus, and Zacchaeus is a chief tax collector. And being Aussies, when we hear about a tax collector, we joke, don't we? "Oh, tax collector, boo, 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 boo." But no, back in those days, it was real. The guy really was a bad guy. He was a traitor. When I was living in America, America declared war against the Taliban, and they invaded Afghanistan to fight against the Taliban. And in the first week of fighting, they captured a Taliban soldier who happened to be an American. And this guy had grown up in California and then left his friends and family in California, signed up with the enemy, the Taliban, to fight against his own country. He was a traitor. And this is what Zacchaeus has done. Because back in those days, what a tax collector did was he left his friends and his family, his country people in Israel, and he'd sign up for the enemy, the occupying forces, the Romans, and he would collect taxes from his own friends and family and give it to the enemy, the Romans, and he would keep a large commission for himself. And so Zacchaeus was a trader, and he was the chief tax collector, so he was the king of the traders. And we also read that he was very rich. So he was very good at what he did. He was rolling in your money, traitor money, blood money, and he looks for Jesus. And at the end of the story, what did Jesus say about Zacchaeus? He said, salvation has come to his house because this man is a child of Abraham, which in the language of Jesus' time meant this man got it right. This man is real. This man is true to himself. So whereas everyone else got it wrong, the people, the religious leaders, even Jesus' own followers got it wrong, Jesus is saying, hey, this man, the tax collector, he got it right. Which is like Jesus now saying, hey, the corporate criminal, he got it right. The carhoon, he got it right. The ecstasy pusher, he got it right. But Mother Teresa, she got it wrong. And you think, wow, Jesus, what are you saying? How can you say this? Well, how does Zacchaeus get it right? Well, there are three things that happen in this story, three reasons why Jesus says Zacchaeus got it right. And if we look at those three reasons, we will find out the same three ways we too can get right with God and also be true to ourselves and true to God. So the first thing that Zacchaeus did was this. He checked out Jesus for himself. He heard Jesus was coming to a city and he had to do everything he could. He ran ahead of the crowd, which was very undignified for a Middle Eastern man, climbed a fig tree, again very undignified, and probably had to put up with the jeering of the crowds that hated him just to check Jesus out for himself on his own terms. Now, tourists are funny people, aren't they? What do? Tourists will go to a country far away, and what do they do when they get to that country? Well, if you're an American tourist, you look for McDonald's, so you can have a hamburger. If you're an English tourist, you look for a pub, so you can have an English beer. But if you're a Chinese tourist, well, the Chinese really know how to do it, don't they? They stay in a bus full of other Chinese tourists, speak Chinese the whole time, and the only time they come out of the bus is to look for a Chinese restaurant in that country, eat Chinese food, and then complain it's not as good as the Chinese food back home. You think, well, that's not the point. That's not why you check out another country. Get out of your bus. Check out the country on its own terms. Speak to the locals. Eat the local food. Learn the local language. That's what you're meant to do. And that's what we're meant to do with Jesus. Check him out on our own terms. Leave our bubble, forget what we've heard or known about Jesus, and check him out for ourselves. And in tonight's story, Jesus, in his own words, says this about himself. He says, I am the Son of God who's coming to your world to look for you, to find you, and to save the lost. And from the rest of what Jesus did, we know what he did to do this was he died for us on a cross, he rose from the dead for us, and now he lives for us, and he put his Spirit in us to give us new life, and there'll be a day he comes back for us. And we need to check out Jesus for ourselves. See, forget everything we've heard about Jesus until now. See, I don't know if you know this, but right now, Christianity is the fastest growing religion in the world. And this is all coming in the non-Western areas. Right now there are 2.6 billion people, mainly in the non-Western world, who say they trust in Jesus and they follow Jesus. In just about 10 years, one in two Africans will follow Jesus. One in three mainland Chinese will follow Jesus. Now this doesn't mean they're right, because the majority can always be wrong, but this does mean we have to take Jesus seriously and check him out for ourselves on Jesus' terms. So that's the first thing Zacchaeus did. He checked out Jesus for himself. But then the second thing that Zacchaeus did was this. He welcomed Jesus into his life. Remember what happened? Jesus came to him, and that's the irony in the story. Zacchaeus is trying to look for Jesus, but Jesus comes to him and says, "Zacchaeus, come down from the tree, because I am now coming into your house." And Zacchaeus welcomes him. He begins a relationship with him. But you're thinking, is that really what's going on here in the story? Well, have you ever wondered, when does a boy become a man? Well, if you're in the Maasai African culture, a boy becomes a man at the age of 15 when he kills a lion for himself. In the Australian culture, a boy becomes a man when he turns 18 and now he can vote for himself. In the Chinese culture, a boy never becomes a man. In your parents' eyes, you will always be a boy. You'll never be grown up. And that means in the Chinese culture, your parents will never, ever let you date a girl. You can't get a girlfriend. And so when you're in high school, you say to your mum and dad, "Mum and dad, can I get a girlfriend?" "No, not until you finish high school and go to uni." Oh, so you get to uni. "Mum and dad, can I now get a girlfriend?" "No, not until you finish uni and get a degree." So you get your degree. "Mum and dad, can I now get a girlfriend?" "No, not until you get a job." So you get your job. "Mum and dad, can I now please, please get a girlfriend?" "No, not until you've paid off a house." And so you pay off your house. And then what happens? Your parents come to you and say, "How come you're not married yet? We need grandchildren." And you think, well, what did you think would happen? Like, you need a girl to get married first. Hello, you wouldn't let me get a girl. Anyway, so that meant all the way through uni, I never had a girlfriend, and I didn't know how to get a girlfriend. And you couldn't ask your Asian friends, because they didn't know either. So I went to an Aussie friend, and he said, "It's so easy. It's just a three-step method. This is all you have to do, paint by numbers, formula. Step one, ask her out to dinner. When she says yes, step two, take her out to dinner. After dinner, step three, in the car, driving her to her place, say, 'Hey, I had a really good time tonight. What about you?' And she'll say, 'Yeah, I had a really good time too.' And then you say, 'Well, would you like to do it again sometime?' And she'll say, 'Yes.' Voila, you've got a girlfriend." That's how easy it is. Three steps. So I tried it out, and I could still not get a girlfriend. Why? I couldn't get past step one. Step one, ask a girl out for dinner, and they always say no. And that's the bit that confused me. I thought, she's got to eat. She's going to be hungry. She's got to do dinner. Why not with me? And because girls, as you know, it's more than just a dinner invitation. It's the invitation to a relationship. And that's what they're saying no to. So girls, you know when a guy asks you for coffee, it's never about the coffee. It's about you. When a guy asks you for dinner, it's never about the dinner, it's about you. When a guy asks you about shopping, it's definitely not about the shopping. It's only about you. You say yes to this guy, he never shops with you ever again. And so when Jesus comes to Zacchaeus to say, "Zacchaeus, come down, I'm coming to your house, I'm going to be your guest, we're going to eat together, we're going to do dinner," Jesus saying, "Hey, come on, Zacchaeus, welcome me into your life." And that's exactly what Zacchaeus does. He welcomes Jesus with joy. And Jesus does the same thing to us. He says, "Hey, I've come into your world. You think you're looking for me, but I've come to you and I've found you. I've looked for you, I've found you, I've died for you, I've risen from the dead for you, I can put my spirit on you, I can give you new life, I'll come back one day for you. All you have to do is welcome me into your life. Trust me, believe in me, follow me." But at this stage, I think, why would I want to do that? Like, I thought the whole Western life was about living for myself, not for someone else. But you see, that's the irony of life. We actually do have to live for something or someone, otherwise there's nothing to live for. And so our choices are these. We could live for success, but there will always be another mountain to climb. We could live for money, but there will always be more money to make. We could live for respect, but there will always be whispers behind our back that we can't silence. We could live for family, but we can never be the perfect son or daughter, the perfect father or mother, the perfect husband or wife. So whatever we live for will always fail us, or we will fail it. But Jesus comes and says, live for me. I will never fail you. I have died for you, and you can never fail me, because I will always forgive you, and I will give you new life if you follow me. So that's the second thing that Zacchaeus did. He welcomed Jesus into his life. And then the third thing that Zacchaeus did was this. He let Jesus change his life. Because once he welcomed Jesus into his life, what happened? He said, hey, all the money I've stored up, I give away now. Everything I once cheated, I pay back four times. In other words, whatever secrets, shame or lies he had in his life, he now completely undoes, even four times over. He's let Jesus change his life. Now, when I was single, life was so simple. I used to live in an apartment, and there would be no food in the fridge, so it couldn't go off. There was no bed. I used to sleep on the floor, so I didn't have to worry about sheets or linen. Life was so simple. And then I married Stephanie, and she moved into my apartment. Oh, and she changed everything, complicated everything. She put food in the fridge. She bought a bed. And the biggest change was she put soap in the bathroom. I never had soap before in the bathroom. And so the biggest change was she insisted I had to wash my hands after coming out of the bathroom. So the first month of marriage, I used to get a hand inspection when I came out of the bathroom. How humiliating. She wanted to make sure, show me your hands. She wanted to make sure I had washed my hands after the bathroom. So when I began a relationship with Stephanie, my wife, she changed everything, and she also changed me. And it's the same with Jesus. When we welcome him into our life, things won't stay the same. He will change us from the inside out. And it's important to see the sequence that this happens in, because notice what happens. Zacchaeus welcomes Jesus first, and then the change happens. But religion teaches us the opposite, doesn't it? Religion says, no, you have to change first, and then God will come into your life. And that's why the people watching complained, didn't they? They grumbled, look at this man, Jesus. He's gone to be a guest with this sinner. Because they're thinking, oh, this is how religion should work. This man Zacchaeus should have fixed up his life first, and then Jesus should have come into his life. But that's not how Jesus works. Jesus says, no, 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 no. I come into your life first, and then the changes happen. See, I bet you were thinking tonight the Bible's going to say something like this. You need to become religious. You need to follow laws. You need to obey commandments. That's how we get right with God. But that's not what Jesus is saying. He says, hey, just welcome me, and then the changes will happen. And I guess that's what it really means to be true to ourselves. If we really, really, really are true to ourselves, we too will realise, just like Zacchaeus, we've got secrets in our lives, we've got lies, we've got shame that we do need to fix up. But then if we're really true to ourselves, we realise, hey, this is something I cannot fix up. This is something no religion can fix up. This is something no self-help book can fix up. I'm going to need something supernatural. I'm going to need Jesus in my life. So do you remember our original question? It was this. How can I be true to myself? Well, we've looked at the story of Zacchaeus, and we can be true to ourselves by doing what he did. One, check out Jesus for ourselves on his own terms. Forget everything we've heard about Jesus before. Secondly, welcome Jesus into our lives. And then finally, thirdly, once that happens, let Jesus change us from the inside out. And if we're true to ourselves, we will realise something has to change. You know, a few years ago, before we had kids, my wife and I, as a regular Saturday routine, we used to go to Bondi Beach, run from Bondi to Bronte and back, jump in, swim at Bondi, and then do breakfast afterwards. One time we did this, it was a big surf day. So 5-6 foot waves, big surf day. And I went for a run, Stephanie went into the water, my wife, and she got taken out by a rip. And she was in a bit of trouble. But fortunately for Stephanie, that day there was a life-saving carnival at Bondi Beach. So there were 70 life-saving clubs all on the beach. So Steph stuck up a hand to call for help, and none of them saw her because they were practicing their races. But fortunately, a swimmer next to Stephanie was able to help her back to the shore. But that same day, a friend of mine called Pierre, who's a strong open ocean swimmer, he goes into those races in the open ocean in Manly, the Cold Classic. But that day he jumped into Bronte Beach and the rip took him right out. And at Bronte Beach, there's a part of the beach called the whirlpool where all the rips meet. And so the rip doesn't just take you out, but then once you're taken out, the water holds you under and then you come back up and the water holds you down again. And then you come back up. And it holds you down again. And you come back up. And so Pierre was caught in his whirlpool. And he was breathing so much water. And he thought, this is it. I am about to drown. This is it. This is the last minute of my life. And he told me, it's true. You do see your life flash before your eyes at that moment. And Pierre said, at that moment, he had to do something he had never ever done before. And that was he stuck his armour out, signalled to the lifesavers on the shore and called for help. And he said the moment he did that, that was the most humbling, helpless moment of his life. And I think if we're true to ourselves, we will realise, yes, we're good people. Yes, we're honourable people. Yes, we're noble people. Yes, we do good things. But we still have secrets in our lives. There are lies there. There's shame there that we do need to fix up. We do need to come to that place where we say to Jesus, hey, I'm helpless. I'm hopeless. Come and find me. And just like Zacchaeus, welcome him into our lives and let him change us from the inside out.
Thanks, Sam, for that. You guys probably have a lot of questions from that talk. Right now, I'm actually going to get a few of the guys to come collect those questions, so if you have them, stick your hand up and he'll come collect them. Will is one of the guys, and Brendan as well. So if you have any questions, but in the meantime, I actually have a couple of questions prepared from when I was listening to the talk.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so my first question, Sam, is in your talk you mentioned that Jesus is, I guess, different to religion. Do you want to clarify that?
Sure, okay. So, because I mentioned Jesus and religion. So the interesting thing in the Bible, the opposite of Jesus, the opposite of following Jesus, isn't to be an atheist. That's not the opposite. So it's not Jesus and atheism. In the Bible, the opposite of Jesus is being religious. And you see that in all the stories of Jesus. Jesus' opponents are the religious people, the do-gooders and the religious leaders. And there's nothing wrong with trying to be good or being moral, but the problem with that is it flips that dynamic around the wrong way. Remember I was saying before, we would expect the story to have gone like this. Become a good person, fix up your life first, and then God will come into your life. But the whole story of Jesus, no, that's not how it works with me. I come into your life first. Trust me, believe in me, and then the changes happen. And the whole problem of trying to do good and be good is not only that we can't be good enough, but it actually makes us arrogant. It makes us smug. It makes us self-righteous, because then we think, oh, God welcomes me because of something good in me. And then we look down on the other people and say, well, okay, they can't be as good as me. And we see that in the story where the people grumble, they complain. Oh, look at Jesus. He's welcomed this tax collector. You know, he's gone into his house, because they're expecting Jesus not to welcome him. And I guess that's the problem with religion. It stops welcoming people because it's saying, hey, you've got to fix up your life first before we welcome you. And Jesus is saying, no, that's exactly how it doesn't work with him. He says, hey, bring me into your life first and then the changes will happen next.
Cool. And just my other question is, I guess there's a lot of religion around the world, like Buddhism, Islam, Taoism. I'm sure a lot of us can relate to these ones, but how do you explain anyways how Christianity is different to all these other religions?
Alright, well, yeah, there are a lot of religions, worldviews, belief systems, so what's the difference and how do we know? Well, I think all of us would love it if they're all true, if they're all valid, if they're all just different ways to the same God, and that means no one is ever wrong. We don't have to judge anyone. But there's just a few issues with that if we do go that way. One issue is we're then saying something of religion, of these different religions, that they themselves aren't saying. So we say, hey, all religions are the same. It doesn't matter what you believe. They're all just different ways of the same God. So then you say to the Muslim, you're actually believing the same God that the Jews are believing. And the Muslim will say, but we're not. But you say, oh, you are. I know. Just trust me. And if you say to the Muslim, hey, you're believing the same God the Christians are. Or you say to the Jew, hey, you're believing the same God the Christians are. They go, no, we're not. Oh, trust me, you are. And then you go to the Christians, hey, you're believing the same God the Hindus are. And the Christians say, no, we're not. Oh, just trust me, I know. And so the problem with saying that is we're just saying we know the religions better than the followers of the religions do. Because the religions themselves say, hey, it's not, they're not the same. We're all believing different things. The other problem with saying, hey, all religions are the same, they're just different ways of the same God, it doesn't matter what you believe, it means you actually don't end up with a God at all. So my wife and I have this, we have a great relationship, but I can count on maybe one hand how many times I bought flowers for my wife, because I just don't see the point of flowers. You know, so you spend $50 on a bunch of flowers just to watch them die. So and that's a funny way of saying, I love you. So I say to her, hey, why don't I just get a $50 note and watch me put it in the toilet, and I'm going to flush it away. And that's me saying, I love you. Well, that's the same as me buying you a bunch of flowers, because we're just going to watch my $50 disappear in front of my eyes. But let's say I repent and I go home tonight and I pass an all-night florist and I say, okay, I will buy my wife some flowers. So I get to the flower shop and the lady says, well, what sort of flowers do you want? And I say, oh, white flowers, red flowers, they're all the same. And she goes, okay, well, do you want roses or daffodils? And I go, well, roses, daffodils, they're all the same. She goes, okay, well, do you want big flowers or little flowers? Oh, big flowers, little flowers, they're all the same. Well, do you want one flower or 100 flowers? One flower, 100 flowers, they're all the same. Now, if I say that to her, what can she give me? She actually can't. She can give me the idea of a flower, but she can't get me a real flower. And the same with us. I think we want to say, hey, it doesn't matter what people believe about God. One God, 100 gods, reincarnation or resurrection. It doesn't matter. But the problem with that is they're all true. All we end up is the idea of a God, but not any real God we can follow or believe in. And so we want a loving God, personal God. We do need to come to him the way he wants us to come to him. So if I was to say to you, hey, this guy's Mikey, he's Asian, he's in Sydney, you guys would say, hey, yeah, you know Mikey. But if I want to say, hey, this guy's really Trevor, he's Norwegian, he's a Viking, and he grew up in Finland, you guys would say, okay, you don't know Mikey. And that's the thing, to know someone, you actually got to know the truth about them. And the truth matters so much to God, he says, hey, okay, there is a way you get to know me, and it's through the true way. And that's why Jesus says, I'm the truth, the way, the life. And it matters so much to God that Jesus had to die on a cross, because there was no other way to him except through Jesus.
I've got a couple of questions from the floor here.
Yep.
The first one is, what does Jesus have to do with me? As an individual.
Sure. Yeah, what does Jesus have to do with me as an individual? Very good question. Well, first of all, in life, in the Western worldview, we've been taught we're all individuals. So, which is a bit of an irony, isn't it? We all shout, we're all individuals. Actually, we don't become individuals. But somehow we've been taught to be independent individuals. But we realise in real life, it's not like that at all. We're always interdependent. And so, just think how the typical Western narrative goes. So you're born, you're dependent on your parents, they tell you what to eat, what to wear. But suddenly at 18, finally, you break free from your parents. Well, if you're an Asian, you never do. But if you're a Westerner, you're free from your parents, and now you can choose the car you want to drive, where to live, who to vote for. You can own a gun, you can drink, you can do whatever you want. But then you're lonely. You think, oh, I've got to find a girl. And so you find a girl, you get married, and then suddenly you become completely dependent on this other person you've settled down with. So I remember I used to be independent. Now I'm married, I'm so dependent on my wife. Every time the phone rings, I have to say to her, please, could you answer it? Please, I don't want to answer it. So you become so interdependent upon the other person. And then you have a kid. And suddenly you can't watch movies anymore because now you have a dependent upon you. You have to change nappies for this kid. You have to feed this kid. So we're always interdependent. And then finally your kid grows up at 18 and boom, you kick your kid out of the house. So when Toby was born, Steph says, what do you want to give him? This is our first ever kid. I'm going to give him a diary and I'm going to circle his 18th birthday because I'm going to say, this is the day you move out. So at 18, you get to finally kick out your kid and now it's you and your wife, yay, finally being independent. You can travel around the world, but of course, no, that's not what happens because that's the age when your parents become dependent upon you and now you've got to look after them. And then finally, you look after your parents. And then you care for them, they eventually pass away. Now you're finally independent again. But of course what happens? Now you're old and you're dependent upon your kids. Which is why we had kids, because we needed someone to look after us when we got old. They're our retirement plan. But unfortunately we've got three boys and someone said it's not going to work with boys. You need girls to look after you. Not that boys don't care, they just don't think of things that you're going to need. Anyway, so as you see in life we're interdependent. And I guess where does Jesus come into this? Jesus comes into this because in the Bible story, and according to what Jesus says, he says, I am part of your life. We're interdependent whether you know or not. Because first of all, he made us as God. He claims, I am your creator. So we somehow owe him our existence. He also says, God provides things for us. So just our day-to-day existence. Our gifts are gifts from God. So we can't just enjoy the gifts. We need to honour the giver who's given them to us. But more than that, because Jesus says, in the end, we were created to have a life with God. And until we have that life with God, we're always going to be restless, just wanting to settle down. I remember when I was in a flatmate with another guy called David. We were both doctors. We were residents at Westmead Hospital. And we had this little ritual where we'll sit on the balcony every night. And we used to bring out our hi-fi speakers onto the balcony and play some blues and jazz music. And then we used to sit there just looking at the stars, listening to the blues, drinking some beers, and just feeling sorry for ourselves. Because we're just two lonely, pathetic, miserable losers in Westmead, you know, on a weeknight. And then one day David said to me, well, explain this whole Jesus thing to me. And I said, well, this is what the whole Jesus thing is about, Dave. Just look at us. Look at us. We're miserable. We're lonely. We're restless. Every 6 months they move us around. We have to live in a different place, different apartment. You know, what we want right now is we want to find a girl, settle down in a place called home. And so this is what the Jesus thing is all about. Jesus saying, hey, you are restless, looking for God, whether you know it or not. And through Jesus, we can find God, settle down in a place he calls home. Because with Jesus, we don't just get the God who made us, we don't just get the God who provides for us, but we get the God who loves for us. And we have a relationship with God. Because in the end, that's who we are. We're relational people. We enjoy things with people. So I don't know if you've ever been a tourist. So you hit Paris, there's the Eiffel Tower, taking pictures in front of the Eiffel Tower, now you're drinking a coffee, then you have a croissant, and you're by yourself, and you're miserable. Because this should have been enjoyed with someone. And the whole Jesus thing is this, life is to be enjoyed with someone, and ultimately with God. With Jesus. So that's how Jesus fits into our life.
Thanks, Sam. Just a couple more questions. I've got a few more, but I'll just ask two more. How can I be sure the Bible is God's word, or is it someone's interpretation?
Sure. So how can I be sure the Bible is God's word, and it's not just someone else's interpretation? Well, I guess the answer is read it for yourself, so you're not trusting someone else's interpretation. Just read it for yourself. And I don't know if you've ever done philosophy. Philosophy is a very fun thing to study because they're always asking these questions like, how do you know the sky is blue? And you're not the only one who sees it that colour and it's not pink for everyone else. How do you know today really is Saturday? How do you know other minds exist and they're not just all robots and you're the only mind that works in this whole room right now? How do you know that you didn't just exist now and everything else is it a memory made up and downloaded into your brain by some evil programmer? How do you know what is true? How do you know? And the interesting thing in philosophy, do you know what? They can't answer any of those questions. Because any question you ask in the abstract cannot be answered. So the only way you can answer questions is to live the question and see whether it works. So how do you know that Big Mac really is $5 when you walk into McDonald's and it's not your interpretation, it's not a social construct, or it's not just that your eyes see $5 but everyone else is seeing $8? How do you know? You know by actually buying the Big Mac and handing over $5. That's how you know. When you drive out of here and you see a stop sign and you're driving, how do you know that sign really is saying stop? And it's not your interpretation or your dreaming, or how do you know you stop and watch the other and the truck go by, vroom, and phew, I'm glad I stopped. So when I teach at a Bible college and I tell the students, hey, there's going to be an exam next Thursday, how do they know? Do they go, how do I know that's just not my interpretation, it's not a social construct, I heard Thursday, everyone else heard Wednesday. People just know. They just know by doing, by starting, turning around, and voila, the exam is there on Thursday. So how do we know the Bible is true? The answer is, well, we can't really answer that question in the abstract. It's a really funny thing. We have to answer it by actually reading it for ourselves. And then how do we know whether we can trust it? Well, again, we just have to read it enough to say, hey, can I really, really, really trust this? See, trust is a funny thing. Trust really is a funny thing. You know, I don't know how much you've studied philosophy, but there was an age in the 1600s where they said you had to prove everything before you could believe it. And they realised if we, in the 21st century, we kept applying that rule, we actually can't believe anything because there's nothing we can prove for sure. So in the end, most of our belief systems come from trust. So how do we know there's a brain inside our head? Well, we just trust that what our doctors tell us is true because we've never seen it for ourselves. When my wife tells me tonight, I love you, as I hand my flowers over to her, how do I know? Do I say, prove it? She says, no. I know because I know her and I trust her. And it's the same thing with the Bible. How do you know? After a while, you just know because you end up trusting the God who's speaking to us through the Bible. And that doesn't mean now you don't admit all the other evidence. You also know because it fits all the data around us in the world as well. Because it fits the archaeological evidence, it fits the contemporary non-Christian accounts from the Romans and the Jews, and it fits the data we know of what's going around in history at the time as well. Can you pray? Okay, sure.
This is going to be the last question for our question and answer time. Quite appropriate to finish off with as well. If Jesus is dead, how do I actually welcome Jesus?
Okay, yeah. So if Jesus is dead, how do I welcome Jesus? So that's a very good question. And I think that's the whole problem with this little short presentation I gave tonight. I was just giving a snapshot of the bigger story of Jesus and the bigger story of the Bible. So the story of Jesus is this. You know, God made us. God made us to enjoy having a relationship with Him. Somehow all of us in our own ways have dishonoured God, mainly by just enjoying what He's given us, but not acknowledging the giver. So enjoying the life He's given us, but not, you know, worshipping and acknowledging the God who gives these things to us. But God can bring us back into this relationship with Him because He sends us His Son Jesus 2,000 years ago. He becomes like us. He becomes a person like you and me. And as Jesus said tonight, I come to look for you, find you and save you. And He did that by dying for us on a cross. Then He rose from the dead and He said, anyone who trusts in me, who follows me, who believes in me, then I will put my spirit in you. So in a way, it's like Jesus lives in us and He gives us that new life. But there will be a day He comes back and sets up His kingdom here on earth. And I know a lot of that just sounds very new. And you think, whoa, but just again remember, for many people in the world it's not a new story at all. It's a story they've been hearing for thousands of years, and as I said, right now it's the fastest growing faith in the world, because a lot of people are saying, hey, I think this story is real. And so for us, okay, we think, okay, Jesus is only a historical figure. Yes, he died, he stayed dead. But if we trust what the Bible says, we trust the changed lives of the people we see around us, and we trust how the majority of the world, especially in the non-West, is sensing, hey, I think this is real, I think Jesus really is still alive today, then we can welcome Jesus in our life. But I guess that is the million-dollar question. Is Jesus really who he claims to be, and can I welcome this person in my life? Mm-hmm. All right, sure. So Mikey's asked me to close this in a prayer where we get to speak to God, and that doesn't mean we have to do anything freaky, because if we're not used to praying, we can pray just with our eyes open, God hears us, just we can pray in our hearts and minds and God hears us. But Mikey's asking me to pray, if tonight you think, hey, you know, I do want to do business with God, with Jesus, and I do want to do what Zacchaeus did, where I check out Jesus, I welcome him and let him change my life, I'm going to pray a prayer where I can put into words what you might be wanting to do. And it'll go simply like this. Dear God, thank you for sending Jesus to find me. Tonight I want to welcome him into my life, and I look forward to the changes that he will make in my life from the inside out. So that's how the prayer is going to go. So I'll pray that one line at a time. If you like what I say and you want to pray that back to God, just repeat it in your heart to God after each sentence. So let's pray. Dear God, thank you for sending Jesus into this world to find me. I want to welcome Jesus into my life, and I look forward to the changes that Jesus will make in my life. Amen.